Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Frank Thielman to the podcast. Dr. Thielman serves as Presbyterian Chair of Divinity and Professor of New Testament Studies at Beeson Divinity School in Birmingham, Alabama. He's an ordained minister in the PCA as well. Dr. Thielman, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Jason. It's delightful to be here. I really appreciate your invitation. Thank you very much.
Well, we're going to be talking today about preaching the book of Galatians. And just for your awareness and for those perhaps listening to this podcast who aren't more broadly familiar with the podcast, I have a series on preaching different books of the Bible. And so I've been pleased over the past couple of years to record podcasts with different authors of commentaries or experts on different books of the Bible. And today I get to speak with you about the book of Galatians. So I'm delighted to get to do that.
Well, thank you. I love the book of Galatians. I teach it fairly regularly at Beeson Divinity School. And it's a powerful book. So this is fun. I enjoy talking about Galatians very much.
Well, listen, before we get into that, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear a word of update on you and your ministry and your family and perhaps anything else of note.
Well, sure. I've been at Beeson Divinity School since 1989. So I've taught here in Birmingham at Beeson for about 31 years, and I've enjoyed it immensely. It's been a wonderful place to be, and our Dean, Timothy George, just recently stepped down from being the dean. Thankfully, he's still on the faculty, but he's sort of retired from his dean's role and now is teaching with us, and he's been a wonderful person to work with over three decades. So I've really enjoyed my teaching here, and I am just carrying it on as well as I can in the midst of the COVID pandemic, but continue to enjoy it. And my wife and I have been married for 36 years, and neither of us are from Birmingham. My wife is from just south of Boston, and I grew up in Western North Carolina. But we raised our three children here. They're all grown and married and scattered all over the country. Our son lives just south of Boston and is an organic chemist. He works in drug development and design, and he's married and has a son, a little two-year-old, that we're just delighted with. And then our two daughters, one lives in Grand Rapids and one in Houston, and they're both married, and we love to see them every chance we can. We just feel like we're a little bit too far away from them.
I understand.
That's a little bit about us.
You mentioned, I believe that you said you've been at Beeson for about three decades. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I think 31 years. So we came in 1989.
Okay. And tell me and tell our listeners just briefly, I'm curious about any current writing projects you have or projects before you.
Well, right now I'm working on a book on Paul. It's kind of it's sort of a biography of Paul in the genre of F.F. Bruce's Paul, Apostle of the Heart Set Free. You know that book. And I've been working on that for a couple of years now. It'll probably take several more years to complete, but that's my current project. And the idea is to put Paul in his historical context and give people a feeling for the world in which he lived, and to trace his life in the context of his letters, and also to talk about his theology in the context of how he applied that theology pastorally in each of the communities that he pastored through his letters.
Wonderful. Well, we look forward to seeing that. Well, listen, let's get into the book of Galatians. Can you give our listeners just a brief kind of broad outline of the book?
Yeah. You know, you can divide Galatians, I think, into three parts. The division is a little bit artificial, but just for the purpose of teaching the book and preaching the book, I think you can think about the first two chapters of Galatians as largely autobiographical. Paul is telling us something of his own story. At least that's the main burden of those first two chapters. And then chapters 3 and 4 get into the details of the argument of the letter. They're very exegetical in their character because they deal with the Old Testament a great deal. They quote the Old Testament, allude to the Old Testament, particularly to the story of Abraham and to the Mosaic Law. And so Paul develops his argument exegetically there in chapters 3 and 4. And then in chapters 5 and 6, Paul focuses on Christian ethics, how Christians should live. So those three parts, I think, are kind of the major parts of Galatians. And that you have to be a little bit careful with that division, because it's not like autobiographical elements don't appear in chapters 3 and 4. They do, especially in chapter 4 and also in chapter 6. And it's not like there isn't any ethics in chapters 1 and 2. There is, where Paul especially talks about how the incident at Antioch resulted in a division in the church there. I think ultimately that was a failure of believers to love one another. So there's ethics there. But I think just in terms of teaching and preaching the book, you can think of chapters 1 and 2 as mainly autobiography, 3 and 4 as mainly developing a theological and exegetical argument, and 5 to 6 is mainly talking about Christian ethics and how we should live.
So when you come to the book of Galatians, one of the questions on the front end, who exactly is this being written to? And then you have the North Galatia or South Galatia theories. How important is it to settle that issue?
I actually don't think it's very important for interpreting Galatians itself. Settling that issue is a lot more important, I think, for studying the book of Acts and for sorting out the chronology of Paul's life and letters. So I do think that is an important issue, but it's not really very important for interpreting the book of Galatians itself. Whether it was written to Christians in North or South Galatia, the argument is really, really very much the same, no matter which audience he's writing to. I do think the letter was written to Southern Galatia. I think most scholars actually take that viewpoint now. There's been a whole lot of archaeological work that has been done in South Central Turkey. And I think most scholars now would agree with the 19th century archaeologist William Ramsey that it makes a lot more sense that this letter was written to South Galatia, the churches in Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, Pisidian Antioch, in Phrygia and Lycaonia, those ethnic regions, which were the southern part of the Roman province of Galatia. And those are churches Paul founded on his first missionary journey with Barnabas and visited again on his second missionary journey with Silas. And Timothy, of course, came from one of those churches, the churches in Lystra. So Timothy himself would have been very familiar with the churches to which this letter was written. And I think Paul probably wrote this letter actually from Corinth on his second missionary journey. And it may have been Timothy that brought him the report, or perhaps it was Luke who brought him the report of what was going on in these churches in Galatia and prompted Paul to write this letter during his ministry in Corinth, I think. Although scholars really differ on that, it's hard to nail down the exact place in Paul's career that where he was located and at what point in that career he wrote the letter.
So you've already kind of brushed up against this, but any further words you want to give us on the historical setting of the book?
Yeah, I think it is important to understand that the book was written in response to Jewish Christians. And of course, you have to be careful here. Many Christians during this period were Jewish. So the book is not in any sense anti-Jewish or anti-Jewish Christian. Paul himself was a Jewish Christian. But there was a group of people that called themselves Christians who also seemed to have been Jewish, who were advocating that it was necessary for Gentile Christians to basically become Jewish before they could truly be Christians. So they were advocating that the male members of the Gentile Christian community had to accept circumcision the circumcision was their main concern, but the letter implies that they also advocated accepting Jewish dietary restrictions and observance of Jewish festivals like the Sabbath. And those were the three markers, really, of Judaism. If you bumped into a Gentile in the ancient Greek and Roman world who didn't know much about Judaism, but you asked that person, what is a Jew? They probably would have answered that's a person that practices circumcision and does not eat pork and takes one day a week off. That's kind of what people knew about Judaism if they knew anything about it. In all probability, these were Jewish Christians. Paul, I think, would say that they were so far beyond the pale of Orthodox Christianity that we probably shouldn't call them Christians, or we should put quotation marks around that, but they were claiming they were Christians, and they were advocating that Gentile Christians had to become Jews first before they could actually be Christians.
So Paul gets right to the heart of his concern when this book opens, and typically we read Pauline letters, or for that matter, more broadly, New Testament epistles, and there's some warm greeting on the front end, perhaps a word of encouragement on the front end. But here Paul has a theological concern, and he gets right at it. Why is there such urgency in Paul's letter to these believers?
I think Paul was profoundly concerned that these Christians were in the process of accepting this idea that the death of Christ on the cross and their union with Christ by faith at their conversion was not enough to make them right with God and to put them within the people of God. He indicates at a couple of places in the letter, he uses some present tenses that indicate they are in the process of converting over to this idea. And so I think that's why he is so deeply concerned in the letter. And you're right, it's written in emergency mode. Typically, Paul, after his greeting, has a thanksgiving prayer report and an intercessory prayer report. You know, if you look at the beginning of Philippians, for example, he thanks God for every remembrance of the Philippians, and he intercedes with God that God might complete the good work he's done in the Philippians. Well, there's none of that in Galatians. Instead of a thanksgiving and intercessory prayer report, Paul says in chapter 1, verse 6, I'm astonished that you're so quickly deserting him who called you in the grace of Christ. And instead of reporting on how he prays for them, he actually, you know, says in this part of the letter that if anyone is preaching to you a gospel contrary to the one you received, let him be accursed. So this is a very stern warning. And I think when the Galatian letter was read aloud to the churches in southern Galatia, everyone would have sat up and taken notice. This probably would have been somewhat startling to them. And I do think the letter had a good effect. I think otherwise we wouldn't have the letter. The Galatians preserved this letter because it accomplished the pastoral goal that God intended for it when he inspired Paul to write it.
So that leads us really to Paul's main argument in the book, and unpack that for us a bit.
Okay, well, I think, you know, the argument circles around two main themes. One is the theme of God's grace, that our righteousness before God is a matter of God taking the initiative and putting us right with himself. And we can't act as if anything we do makes us right with God. It's all God's work, and it happens at his initiative. And of course, the false teachers were saying, well, you know, it's all well and good to have faith in Christ, but there is this other thing that you must do. You must also adopt a Jewish way of life. And that's where Paul draws the line and says, this is no gospel at all. It's a gospel that is masquerading as the gospel. So he is very concerned to describe and to argue for the importance of the grace of God. And he does that biblically. He does it out of the Old Testament. So he's showing us in Galatians that the whole Bible encourages us to embrace the grace of God and to accept it. It's not just a New Testament thing. The other theme that's really important in his argument, and the two are really go hand in hand, is the theme of Christian unity across ethnic and social lines, because the real concern with the Jewish Christians that were advocating that Gentile Christians had to become Jews in order to belong to the people of God, their concern was that they have really ethnic homogeneity within the church, that they not have a multiplicity of nations, but the church should consist of one nation, one people group, the Jewish people group. And Paul argues throughout chapter 3 very vigorously that if the church consists of only one people group, then the promise that God gave to Abraham that he would be the father of many nations can't be fulfilled. And so an important part of Paul's argument and of the one of the major burdens of the book is to demonstrate that no form of Christianity that claims it is superior to other forms because of ethnicity or because of the social group to which the Christians belong can possibly be Orthodox Christianity. Orthodox Christianity crosses these national boundaries and these social boundaries, and it works for unity among people as God forms his newly created people in the church. And that, you know, that's a place where Galatians really overlaps thematically with the book of Ephesians. So right. in Ephesians chapter 2, beginning of verse 11 in chapter 2, and then running really right on down through through chapter 3, verse 13 or so, the center of Ephesians is this notion that Christ has destroyed the dividing wall of hostility, not only between God and human beings, but also among human beings who have embraced Christ in faith. And I think Galatians is also about taking down that dividing wall of hostility. The argument's a little bit different, but it's very, very similar in its main theme.
So let me shift gears a little bit. And again, thinking about those who are going to be preaching through this book or teaching through this book, what passages or issues in the book may prove knotty that we need to have our eye out for?
I think one of the, there's several passages actually that are quite difficult in the book. I think maybe the most difficult passage in the book is chapter 4, verses 21 to 31, this what Paul calls an allegory, where he kind of exegetes the story of Sarah and Hagar and does it in a way that it, by the end of it, we may be somewhat puzzled about how Paul is using the Old Testament there. Is he really using it allegorically in the way that we would use the English word allegory? I think he's actually doing something a little bit different there than just what we would call allegory. He uses the Greek word, he uses the Greek verb allegorize there about what he's doing. But he's not just using the text symbolically. I think he's using it more typologically. And he is making an important point there. But that's a place where I think it would be very important for the preacher to spend some extra time in studying a good commentary or two on Galatians before preaching on it. Another place is in chapter 3, where Paul talks about the Mosaic Law. That's some kind of thorny ground right there just in terms of understanding it for the purposes of preaching. It's wonderful once you do kind of go to the hard work of figuring out what's going on in the passage. What Paul's communicating is absolutely wonderful. But it does take some extra work. So I think that might be one reason preachers sometimes avoid Galatians, or they avoid preaching it cover to cover expositionally, is because you do have these kind of thorny passages in it. But I would just urge people not to be put off by the difficulty of those passages. They are rich and wonderful, but the book communicates such an important message for the church that it is a book, I think, that merits the extra study needed to preach it well.
Well, let me try to pull together the conversation with perhaps just one final question that you can elaborate on. And that is just this. What concluding advice would you give to preaching Galatians, particularly perhaps a word of encouragement or a word of counsel, or here are three things to keep in mind? Give us some final words of encouragement and instruction.
Okay. Well, I would encourage people, preachers and teachers in the churches, to use Galatians, to preach it and teach it often. I think it's actually a book that probably ought to be taught in Sunday school, you know, on a fairly regular rotation, because doctrinally it's very rich, and it really helps to instruct our church members about what the Bible teaches on central topics like God's grace, like unity among Christians across social lines. Chapters 5 and 6 talk a great deal about the Holy Spirit, how the third person of the Trinity brings fruit to bear in our lives. So we get into really practical issues of Christian ethics in Galatians. It's a letter that also has a very exciting backstory. So telling the story of Galatians, I think, is engaging for people that we teach. They learn a lot about Paul, so they get a little bit into the book of Acts, and that's really good. And it's just a really engaging and exciting story. Paul himself is excited as he writes this letter. He's upset. We see the human face of Paul. We can really identify with Paul in this letter because he's upset about something that's very important. So the letter is really engaging. It makes, I think, for exciting preaching and teaching, but much more important than that, it also is very instructive theologically. I think those are all reasons to preach and teach Galatians. One other feature of it, and this is also true of Ephesians, which I think is similar in some ways, is that Galatians is a short letter. And so we can preach through it cover to cover expositionally, or teach through it in a good meaty Sunday school class in one quarter. So in 12 weeks, we can devote a week to part of a chapter and just try to do a chapter in 2 weeks, kind of divide the chapter more or less in half,
right,
wherever a good division place is, and preach 12 sermons or teach 12 Sunday school classes on Galatians. And by the end of that series, our people should have a pretty good handle on some really foundational Christian doctrines. And in the process, if we've interpreted the book well, as we have been preaching it, we have modeled for them how to interpret Scripture so that when they read the Bible on their own, they can kind of think, well, what did my pastor do when he was teaching through Galatians? How did he handle this difficult passage? And we might even, in our preaching, do a little bit of instruction on, you know, what we did to prepare for our sermon. I mean, that's not a bad thing, to help teach people how to read the Bible with understanding. So there are a lot of good reasons, I think, for teaching and preaching Galatians. I think one of the warnings about Galatians is that it's easy to teach Galatians in a lopsided way, so that we either focus on God's grace all the time and we neglect the important theme in the letter of unity across social boundaries, which is a result of how gracious God has been to us, or, you know, we do the opposite. We'll sometimes get all excited about the notion of social unities across boundaries, and we'll neglect to teach the doctrine of God's grace. And so I would just say, just do both, because they both go together. If we really believe in God's grace, then we believe it is available for everybody, no matter who they are, and right across those social boundaries. We want to extend the gospel to every human being created in God's image. So the two things go together, and it's important not to be lopsided, I think, in our preaching and teaching.
Well, Dr. Thielman, you've done a very good job of helping us to better understand the book of Galatians, and I believe also to inspire us to preach and teach it. And I pray that many will do just that. Thank you for joining me today on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. I really appreciate your invitation. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.